host Scott Patton, along with the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin.
Oh, so I kind of shook you up, did I?
You did, and we're recording this right away because Martin and I were discussing what health concern we wanted to discuss, and he picked autism, and so we went to look at one of the newsletters in the newsletter archives on autism and vaccinations, newsletter number 914, and holy smokes. So I decided that Martin was about to talk, and I thought, you know what, we need to capture this raw emotion on our show, and I can't remember feeling as much outrage about something as I do about what I just finished seeing. I'm just like, oh my God.
So let me just set it up a bit before we get into this. Autism is on the rise. 20 years ago, we had 1 in 10,000 children autistic. We are experiencing now 1 in 150 and perhaps closing in on 1 in 100. So we're experiencing about a 100-fold increase in a condition. Autism is a spectrum problem, meaning it's something that's ranging from mild to severe. So on the mild end, you may get things like learning disabilities or communication problems, people who maybe stutter or can't express themselves or have aberrant behaviors, you know, obsessive compulsive behaviors, that sort of brain problems. The learning disabilities are a stronger thing. Then you have these repetitive behaviors like, you know, uncontrollable swearing or tics and stuff like that. And that, then it goes into bigger issues where autism essentially is an illness of the brain where the brain is unable to choose, to select the topic that it wants to focus on. Most of us are able to read while the TV is on, or listen to a conversation with one person at a cocktail party while there are another 40 conversations going on in the brain. I mean, not in the brain, in the room.
Right.
In the brain, what happens in an autistic brain is all of these conversations have the same volume, same loudness. So you're unable to distinguish. And this is not just auditory input. This is all of the input. So this person becomes sensory overload, and they start doing behaviors that are essentially trying to remove themselves from the inputs. So they'll find peace, for instance, in being hugely introverted or reading only. They become genius in one area, but usually quite inappropriate in the social setting. And then on the complete extreme, you have a person just curled up in the corner of the room with the eyes closed and hands over the ears, just hurting. Now, and beyond that, you can have an extreme that Scott just was exposed to, and we're going to take you there, is that when something goes so quick that it actually completely blows out the immune system. Now, what happens is autism is a disease of 1,000 little cuts, or the last straw that breaks the camel's back.
Right.
It just depends how big the last straw is, how quickly the camel breaks.
Martin, I just wanted, if I can interrupt you just
for
a second, just to put the whole thing in perspective, in the UK in the last decade, it's grown 1,500%, so 15 times. In California, 1 in 150 children is autistic, and that was a 54% increase from 2001 to 2002. Some of the primary causes they believe of autism are from vaccines or maternal overexposure to heavy metals and antibiotics, heavy metals from industry pollution of the air and water, and chemicals used in the electronics industry. Significantly, and this is the part that I wanted to make sure that we said, because you know, some people may say, well, this is just, you know, kind of some sort of natural thing. The first cases of autism were described in the U.S. in the 1940s. So this is like 60 or 70 years ago. And they showed up after the vaccines for whooping cough were introduced.
Mm-hmm. So there could be a very strong correlation. What the medical or the mainstream pharmaceutical defenders of vaccinations will say, but it doesn't really happen in every child, right? I mean, one in 100 or one in 150, that's very insignificant, right? But to that one in 150, it's very significant. And so, you know, you have the spectrum. You know, what is the spectrum? You know, is it mild, medium, hard, or really awful? I was trying to say that the really awful is essentially a full blowout of the immune system. You know, some children have, after their vaccination, have a mild fever. Some children have will have a swollen gland and redness. Some will have a lot of fever, and some will have lasting problems. You and I recorded something a while back when we were talking about vaccinations and the flu vaccinations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
we
got into Guillain-Barré syndrome, which damages the nervous system of people. That's one of the possible consequences. So, anyway, I would like to just, you know, let you in on this, the extreme case of it, which doesn't end up in autism. It ends up in the death of the person. And that was this case I wanted to show you, the memorial put up on the internet for a young man by the name Ian.
Yeah, a baby.
Yeah, a baby. Anyway, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. This family, they had a baby, was healthy at birth, and they gave him some vaccines, including one for, I think, hepatitis C.
B. Hepatitis B. A common hepatitis vaccine that the doctor will tell you, well, you should vaccinate against hepatitis B. It's common for it, except that it's not, you know. I mean, if you practice reasonable hygiene, you should not get it.
Right. Well, and this also speaks to a philosophy, right, of living, in that we're trying to kill all these things, and which you have to assume a vaccine does. How does it protect you from the mumps or the measles or polio or hepatitis B? Well, there's a process, and it's all about, you know, the killing. And I keep thinking to a friend of mine who's married to this wonderful gal, and when she was young, every time anybody in the neighborhood had the mumps, the measles, the whooping cough, whatever it was, she took her kid over to play with them. And
essentially willful and intentional exposure to the viral infection.
That's right. You know, there's a kid with it, my kid's got it. You know, and he says all the time he's known her, she has never even had a cold, because her immune system was just so strong from doing what, you know, when you think about it, when we were cavemen and cave women, and, you know, we didn't have doctors running around poking us, what did we do? Well, we had colds, we had flus, we had all these things, and we lived and we were stronger for having gone through it, right?
Right. So what I want to make point about is this. There is a difference between a significant illness and inconvenience.
Yes.
Chickenpox, for the most part, during childhood, is inconvenient. You know, for 10 days to 2 weeks, you have ugly spots all over your body, and you get over it, and that's that.
Exactly.
A flu is an inconvenience. You don't go to work for a week. There are other illnesses that are much worse, you know, that perhaps should be eliminated, you know. But even that is not necessarily very clear. It's still not clear whether polio was eliminated by better hygiene or by vaccination.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the example is that you can create immunity by exposure. And vaccination is a tool that the industry is using as a tool to prevent an infection, to prevent viral illness. The problem with vaccines is that you're needing to introduce a virus that has been deadened somehow, typically by means of some poisons, even heavy metals. So when you inject this vaccine into a body, especially a body of a very small child, you're inserting a load of toxins that can overwhelm the immune system. And one of the results can be autism. Anyway, we're going to include the link to the site called Ian's Voice, The Life of Ian Larson Gromovsky. And on it, they actually chronicle Ian's life, you know, day one and two and seven. And then, you know, he was a healthy boy. The first, 7 days, he was a perfectly good, happy child. You know, he was just fine. Everything cool. And then, on day eight, he received the hepatitis shot. And this website chronicles it, you know.
Yeah, it's very graphic and disturbing.
Yeah, this is not easy to watch.
Yeah, it's you know, to think that here we are in a healthy, you know, a health conscious society, and we're you know, there's a healthy baby, and then something we do. I mean, because he's laying there. I mean, he's not like he got up and did something. It's not like his mother's milk caused something. It's, you know, we did something, and then.
Yep. And you know, here's the mother. She trusted her doctors.
Yeah. Yep.
And in statistics, you know, this was probably 1 in 100,000, or 1 in 1,000,000. I don't know what the chance is for this to happen, but it did happen. And so he lived 40 days past the injection. And he was a loving boy that trusted his mom. But his organs shut down. His hormones went completely to heck. It's just, it just was really bad. Anyway, he died. He died at age 47 days. In some way, some sense, this might have been very kind to the mother, because had he survived, he would have been a wreck for the rest of his days, dependent on his mother, dependent on his father, dependent on the society. And that's what happens with a lot of these autistic children. I mean, they are in various degrees of damage. You know, some are somewhat functional, but many are not.
So, Martin, some of the problems that come from these are obviously, like, there's mercury. You know, everyone knows, like, mercury is very toxic. Don't you know? Don't touch it. Don't ingest it. Don't have anything to do with it. And yet, we have it in as ingredients in a lot of these vaccines. So, you know, let's suppose I'm sure I have heavy metal toxicity in my body and other things like that. I just happen to be one of those people that is not as sensitive to it as Ian was. And so, but not, having said that, it's not something I want to, you know, keep having increasing and increasing amounts in my body. Is there a ways that we can, like, leach these heavy metals out of our body or remove the mercury? Obviously, if it's mercury in a filling, you know, get the doctor, the dentist, to like remove the filling, put a new filling in that's not mercury based. But
and if you do that, please make sure it's done under the understanding that this is hazardous material. When you start drilling it, you're actually vaporizing it. So if you inhale the vapors, you're going to go downhill. If you swallow the bits, you're going to be poisoned. So significant precautions.
Right.
Lots of suction, rubber dams, oxygen, you know, gas masks, all of that. That all is needed. You know, it needs to be treated as a hazmat situation.
I have to tell you this story, Martin. I had a client who I was working with on internet marketing projects with, and she was like a dental hygienist, but probably before there was anything like a dental hygienist, and her husband was a dentist. And so she was in her like 80s, 90s, and we were talking, and I said, well, yeah, but like, you know, what about this mercury stuff, right? And she goes, oh, she says, that mercury, it's, my husband worked around mercury all the time and never had any problems with it. And he's dead now, right? And I wish I'd asked, like, what did he pass away from, right? Because, you know, I was like, it's not mercury poison, it's this, this, and this, which, of course, caused by mercury, right? I don't know, right? I have no idea whether it was a heart attack or cancer or he just died in his sleep. I have no idea. But she went on and on about how it was...
It was not a problem.
It was not a problem. He'd been around it for, like, 30, 40 years, and it was not a... You know, I don't know, maybe he was hit by a car. I have no idea how he passed away.
Well, let me give you a sidebar to that. When I was quite toxic with mercury, I had a lot of very dark thoughts. Suicidal thoughts are pretty much a daily affair. The interesting side thing is that the dentist is the profession most inclined to dying of suicide.
Oh.
All of the professionals, you know, we track doctors and architects and real estate agents and whatever else, dentistry is the profession with the highest suicide rate.
Wow.
but anyway, what I want to say is this. It's the thousand cuts, it's the thousand straws piled on high, and it's the last one that breaks the camel's back. In research, this is proved that if you have a dosage of mercury that kills 1 in 100, and combine it with a dosage of lead that kills 1 in 100, the kill rate on that is 100. So let me explain what that means. If the dosage would have killed only 1% of the population, and you combine the two things, it kills everybody.
So it's not 1 plus 1.
It's not the exponential on it. The factor that is the multiplier is practically infinity.
Yeah.
So when we discuss a little bit of mercury in isolation, which is so common for the medical industry, they say, well, give me the rate of mercury toxicity and what is it doing to the population. They always want to have a research that specifically isolates this one thing. So they will focus on mercury alone and give you a number.
Yeah.
You know, 2 milligram, 2 parts per billion, or whatever the number is, right? Then they come up with a number for lead and cadmium and herbicides, pesticides, organophosphates, and rocket fuel and flame retardants, and you name it, all of these things. Each one of those items has been researched and has had its kill dosage established. And then they dial it back 100-fold and say, okay, this is the safe dosage. We don't mind that much.
Wonderful.
But then what happens in our society is this multiplication. You know, more and more of these things come out. I guess this is like one glass of water will quench your thirst. 100 glasses of water will probably drown you.
Yes.
Point made, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What more do I need to say? That the approach of our society is wrong to the measuring of the effects. I know, for instance, that recently, probably 2-3 years ago, National Geographic released a study where some people volunteered to have their blood analyzed to see what sort of stuff is found in the blood. And I've seen something of the sort repeated by some journalists in other settings. And what is found is that, for instance, DDT, that has been banned in the United States for, I think, 40 years or some number like that.
A long time.
Yes, you could probably look up the year DDT was banned. It was in the 70s. It's still found in the blood of people. I've seen a study on the umbilical cord blood analysis, and the scientist doing that is finding phenomenally high levels of toxins in the blood of the freshly born, newly born people. I actually speculate that nature, in its wisdom, because it cannot make more mothers, but it can make more fetuses, that it actually detoxifies the mother at the expense of the child. So I think that the firstborn will get a higher dose of the toxins than any other of the children. And of course, these days we have the technology to save every child. In the 1700s, a Tikka mother would have 12 pregnancies, and four or so many of them would make it into adulthood.
Right.
Today we have 3 pregnancies, and 2.4 of them make it to adulthood. So we don't lose many. And gosh, every child is precious. I have 2 kids, and my wife had 4 pregnancies. The first 2 were unsuccessful. So number 3 and number 4 made it into adulthood. And, I keep wondering, are we lucky because because she actually had lost the baby?
Yeah, what would have happened if the baby had been born?
Right. And, of course, we suffered greatly emotionally. That was not a simple thing. You lose it, you grieve it. I mean, this is not an easy thing to deal with.
No.
Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that we have the technological ability to now save children, and we save most of them. And then these children have children, and this is compounding the toxic level from generation to generation. So not only is it more toxic out there, but it's also more toxic on the inside. So it's more likely for us to have problems caused by the toxicity, whether these are allergies, which is related to perhaps liver toxic load, or acne and eczema related to the digestive system problems, or the autism that we're talking about now.
Right.
Scott, how are we doing for time?
We're coming up to the end.
So I think we need to break it apart, and we need to promise people that we're going to actually talk about what causes it and what one can do to reverse it, because it is possible. It is reversible. We know what to do. So let's just say that
next week, everybody, we're going to talk about how you reverse toxicity.
Yes, as it relates to all of the degenerative problems, but specifically to autism. So this is Martin for Life Enthusiast.
Wait. Before you go, because this has been probably one of the most somber, I've heard you, Martin, and I think probably that you've heard me, really go to the Life Enthusiast Co-op website, go to the newsletter articles. The top one right now is autism vaccinations. It's 9/14. Scroll down if it's not at the top when you listen to this. Read through that article. It's going to change your life. And in the second section where it says autism, the 4th paragraph down, the hyperlink says his name was Ian. Go and look at that, and you'll understand
what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that newsletter, unfortunately, there were a couple of videos on it with Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey interviewed by Larry King on CNN. I found those videos on YouTube, and I don't know if I'll be able to find them again, but wherever they were, they were taken offline, so you might have to search for that.
Yeah, that's right. Well worth watching.
Indeed. Anyway, so this is www.life-enthusiast.com, 1-866-543-3388. We are restoring vitality to you and to planet, one at a time.